welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 238 of the podcast. And it is the 8th of October, 2015, as I record this a few days earlier than usual, because I am off to Paris this weekend. It is a family trip, but I will be heading to the Musée d'Orsay and also Père Lachaise graveyard. So expect some pictures on Twitter and Instagram and my JF Penn author Facebook page. Because fans of my fiction generally enjoy pictures of graveyards. I love it. And I obviously realised it's so funny because I now, obviously in last show, I said, wow, look at all these people from all over the world. So popping to Paris for the weekend sounds a bit flash, but it's actually just a couple of hours on the train from London. It's like closer than, I want to say it's closer than Edinburgh. But anyway, it's not that far. And so it's very doable. And I love being in Europe and I don't take it for granted because I spent 11 years living in Australia and New Zealand, where you had to fly a long time to get somewhere where people didn't speak English. So it is much easier to travel here. So I'm looking forward to my weekend in Paris, and there will be some pictures. So that's cool. So today I actually have an interview with me, which is a little bit different. I was interviewed recently by the lovely Sarah Painter on the Worried Writer podcast. And it's interesting because I am still writing a book on mindset in between everything else. And Sarah actually covers fear, self-doubt and procrastination as a writer, specifically on her show, because those are things that she feels herself. Obviously, these are things we all feel. So highly recommend that you check out worriedwriter.com, where Sarah has interviews with other people. And we're covering topics around mindset, productivity and creativity. So I thought you might like a listen to that interview. So that's coming up soon. I also have something very exciting for you. The webinars so far have this year have been super popular, and I am doing one with Mark Dawson on Facebook advertising for authors. And of course, Mark's been on the show talking about Facebook advertising. And so we're going to do a webinar. It will be a 90-minute webinar, a whole load of teaching and Q&A. That will be on the 29th of October at 4 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. London, in that weird week where the British time zone moves one weekend and the American time zone moves the following weekend. It's a really annoying week. So we go from 5 hours difference to 4 hours difference, if you were wondering. But all the details at thecreativepen.com/Facebook webinar. And there are limited places, so please sign up if you want to come on the call. And you can also get the recording if you can't make it live. So that is thecreativepen.com/Facebook webinar. Okay, and on personal stuff, I'm actually utterly exhausted because I spent last weekend, a 4-day weekend, hardcore editing Risen Gods, which I'm co-writing with Jay Thorne, and I printed it out and wrangled it into better scenes with cliffhangers and did a whole load of work around polarity shift and conflict and just a lot of work. And I'm really, really tired now. It's very tiring work. There's more on that kind of story editing because, you know, I know people are interested in editing process. Episode 208 with Sean Coyne, that's spelled C-O-Y-N-E, author of The Story Grid, which is now my number one recommended book for fiction writers in terms of understanding how story is structured. It's excellent, excellent book. And my sort of restructuring of the novel was based around the story grid, and that sort of polarity, it's the best explanation of the polarity shift that I've experienced really in The Story Grid, or listen to that episode 208. 8 if you don't have a clue what I'm talking about. So now I've handed the book back to Jay for his round of edits, and I will get it back next week. We're on a really hardcore schedule, actually. We're pushing each other to keep the energy. Like, the book has a lot of energy, and I want to capture that energy in how fast we move through this process. We still have a really robust process. It's going through both of us, 2 rounds of edits and a professional editor and a proofreader and beta readers, just a lot faster than usual. And it will be out on pre-order by the next show. I'm committing to that. And you'll be able to see the cover and all that. And it will come out on the 1st of December. So that's very cool. And if you're listening any other time from sort of mid-October, if you go to jfpenn.com/risengods or just search your favorite online store for Risen Gods, you should find that book. Okay, so here's what you've sent me this week. Our resident police chief, Billy Grogan, listening in at the Police Innovation Conference in Cambridge, and sent a picture of Night on the River. That sounds cool. Police innovation sounds like a good thing. Ivy Sinclair, listening while walking my dog in Minnesota, and sent a picture of a lovely walk, fall colours, autumn colours, as I would say, obviously. Alison Sipe or Sip said, just finished listening to another amazing podcast. Thank you, Alison. I always, it's always lovely to hear that people enjoy the show. Barry Pearman. Oh, Barry, this made me laugh. It was a lol moment. It really was. Barry sent, listening while building raised beds here in Auckland in the spring. And he actually sent a picture of him doing a haka, which was really funny in his what looks like an allotment or garden. And thank you for that, Barry. It gave me a real laugh. And obviously, go the All Blacks. And if you don't follow the Rugby World Cup, England are now out, which was a bit of a shocker considering we're hosting it. But it's a good job I have dual citizenship, so I can therefore support the All Blacks. And in fact, I do support the All Blacks over England, mainly because of the haka. So there you go. And again, if you don't know what I'm talking about, Google All Blacks haka, spelt H-A-K-A, and you will be in for a treat. Okay, Maggie said, I just discovered your podcast, feel like a little kid stumbling upon box of crayons, chocolates and dress up clothes. Excellent, Maggie. And add stickers to the mix. We're fond of stickers here at the Creative Pen. Becky Tabochkin. Tabochkin. Sorry, Becky. The podcast is saving my sanity in traffic. A picture of a traffic jam. I do love to accompany people on their drive. So yeah, like drive time radio. I'll have to develop a smoother voice. Wynne Charles says, eating breakfast and listening to your podcast. Derek Chamberlain, listening to the podcast while waiting for the subway to take me to work, and a picture of the subway in Japan. Honoré, back at the gym. Oh, honoré. Every week. Yeah, it's brilliant. Fantastic. Monica T. Rodriguez, so glad I had your podcast to get me through another work day. Time just flies. Brittany Fichter, adding business costs and discussing a book cover with my 99 Designs artist as I listen to your podcast, which is great because 99 Designs are the sponsor for today's show, and I'll come to that advert in a minute. Elsie Mawson says, listening to the podcast while waiting for the bus to uni, just heard thunder, and it is a picture of a very miserable bus stop in the rain. It really, really grim. So glad we could accompany you. Krishawn Keller says, listening while installing a ceiling fan in my new writing office, and a picture of a ceiling fan. It's the first ceiling fan we've had on the show. Fantastic stuff. And Christopher Ryan says, I'm a bit behind listening to September 28th podcast, using Dragon to walk and write. How to, I presume you meant how to details, please, where it says how to derails. And I'm thinking that perhaps I've derailed your listening here, Chris. But definitely, we will be having Monica Lionel on the show. And Monica has a book called Dictate Your Book. So we will be going into the details of dictation in a coming up podcast. All right, you can always tweet me at The Creative Pen. Or email me, joanna@thecreativepen.com, and let me know what you're doing while listening to the show. All right, so a bit of an interesting new 99 Designs little ad today. So this podcast is this podcast episode is sponsored by 99 Designs. You can go to 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A, for your free power pack upgrade, which is worth $99. So I am now using, and currently I just put it up yesterday, so we don't have any designs yet, but I'm currently using 99 Designs for a new illustration. So we need a map of New Zealand for the front of Risen Gods, which is a dark fantasy novel. And as you know, all good fantasy books must have a map in them. And the geography of the country is actually very important. So I created a new contest on 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A, and added my requirements. And my requirements, you know, it's really good to do detailed requirements. So I've said black and white map of New Zealand for the front of a dark fantasy novel, image quality for printing in a book, and also a vector file for resizing and PNG and JPEG for web use. The story is set in the real country of New Zealand, so the map needs to be accurate and include these places. And then I have a list of the places that I want to go on the map. The book is dark fantasy, supernatural thriller, and based on the Maori gods and natural disaster slash apocalyptic style. So we would like some elements of design around oceans, volcanoes, etc. So basically the process with 99 Designs is you put up your contest, and then designers submit their work. You can select different options like, you know, keep it secret from, you know, the designers can't see each other's work, or they can see each other's work. And I've really enjoyed the process when I did this for The Key to the Gates of Hell. I think that doing an illustration like this, like it's when you know what you want and when you have an established designer, it's very easy to use the same designer. But when you don't really know what you want, having something like 99 Designs is fantastic because you get a whole load of people working on the project. And what you get, I think, is things that you might not have expected that you might like. So I think that's very cool. So over the weekend in Paris, I will be expecting to get some designs, and then I will be fielding comments, questions, designs, etc. And I might even be having a poll next week on the show. I might swap around my sponsors. you know, so you can see, and I'll definitely be doing a blog post about the process, because I think it's very, very cool. I love working with professionals in this way. I think it's super fun. So after you've, you know, you've gone through the process, you then choose finalists, and then you can go back and forwards with comments. You can say, oh, that, you know, you can rate them. You say, oh, I don't like that one. I like this one better. Can you please do another iteration of that one? And when you have a design you like, that's when you pay. So very cool. And of course, you can get book cover design, which is what most authors need. But you can also get illustrations, as I said, and graphic design, web page design, social media banners, headers, posters, postcards, flyers, email, newsletter templates, t-shirts, mugs, and so much more. And you can get that free power pack upgrade, which gives your project more chance of getting noticed with bold headers, highlighted background, and featured listing by going to 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A. And yeah, have fun with that. Very excited to get that map. And that is, I feel like, you know, now we've got the cover and we're working on the edits, it's coming together. And of course, I am having Jay on the show in a couple of weeks, probably sometime mid-November-ish, in order to talk about our process. Which, again, we're both, it's very, very good. I'm loving it. I definitely want to do more collaborations. Okay, so this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. It means a lot to me that you support the show. Thanks especially to new patrons, Jamie Davis, who runs MedicCast.tv, videos for healthcare professionals, which I just thought was really interesting. Also, thanks to Anne Walsh and Charlotte Delgano Bacci, which is a super name. So we have, as I mentioned, we've hit the milestone where I promised an extra Q&A show every month to Patreon supporters only. So I will send out the link again on Patreon with a link to a form where you can submit questions if you are a supporter. And I'll be recording that show in the next week, probably, because I'm moving house the following week. So I'll be super busy. So check your Patreon settings that you so that you get emails from Patreon, and because the extra audio will go out that way. So I really do, as I said, appreciate the Patreon support. And of course, you can add just $1 per show to a maximum of 2 shows a month if you like. And then you'll get that extra monthly Q&A as well. So you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Thank you. Right, let's get on with the interview with me.
I'm very excited to welcome Joanna Penn onto the podcast today. Joanna writes thrillers under the name JF Penn, as well as running The Creative Pen, which gives advice to authors on the business side of things. I love Joanna's podcast, and listening to her energy and enthusiasm was one of the catalysts for starting my own. I also read her Business for Authors book back at the end of 2014, and it really made me see my writing in a new way. She opened my eyes to the way in which I could approach it as I would any other business. And being a bit of a control freak and quite business-minded, I love her talk of plans and production schedules and so on. Joanna is very proud to be indie published, and I love her can-do attitude and her work ethic. Even if you're not interested in self-publishing, I highly recommend listening to the interview as we get into overcoming self-doubt and staying productive and creative. I also think that even if you're traditionally published and have an agent or are aiming for those things, there is lots of value in educating yourself in the realities of the business, contracts and so on. We all just want to write, that's why we got into this. But if you want to make money or have even the possibility of earning a living, I think that being business-minded and empowered is the way to go. Welcome to the show, Joanna, and thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you for the lovely introduction, Sarah. That was wonderful.
Well, thank you. I hope I covered most things in the introduction, but just to break the ice a little bit with the audience, could you tell us about your novels?
Yes, well, the Arcane series, I like to describe it, well, actually, readers have described it as Dan Brown meets Lara Croft. So it's a kind of, you know, action adventure thriller with religious conspiracy overtones. I have a master's degree in theology, so that definitely comes through in the Arcane series. But I also love action adventure explosion movies. So that kind of, that's really my sort of super fun going around the world blowing things up series. And then I have the London Psychic series is a bit darker mystery, more like sort of P.D. James meets Stephen King series of books that's set obviously in London. So two quite different tones, I think, to the books. And but, you know, I'm writing something different at the moment. So I think, you know, we all hit our stride with our writing. And but I'm mainly definitely in the thriller subgenre, I would say.
Mm-hmm. I've actually just started reading Desecration, which is the first of the London Psychic trilogy, and it's great, so I highly recommend that.
Aww, thank you so much. And yeah, it's funny because it's definitely a kind of a slower pace and a deeper level of thinking, but it was a book that I just had to write. It was one of those that really came up from inside as opposed to one sort of targeted at a market. So thank you for
It's wonderful, and I love dark stuff, and I love things with a supernatural edge, so it's as if you wrote it with me in mind. So
you have a slight sort of magical element.
Yes, I do. I can't seem to help myself.
No, me too. I'm like, I want to write something without something stupid, something demonic. Surprise, surprise.
It just pops up.
It does.
So going back to the beginning, what was your journey into becoming a novelist? Had you always wanted to write fiction?
Well, I was always a reader. You know, my mum tells a story of me sort of wandering into my parents' room when I was like 4 years old, dragging books rather than a teddy bear. So I've always been a massive reader, an introvert, like many people listening, I'm sure. You know, spent my teenage years in books rather than anything else. And so I always read. But my mum was an English literature teacher. I also went to Oxford. So I had this very much of a literary background, and I kind of grew up with, and my dad was in education as well, so I kind of grew up with this idea that the only book you're allowed to write is one that might win the Booker Prize or the Pulitzer Prize, you know. So in terms of, you know, that sort of upbringing, I never thought I would write fiction because even though I read some literary fiction, I read a lot of more thriller writing, and I like nonfiction, I like travel books, you know. So I never really equated it as something that I might do. I also went into, like many people, a job after university. I became a management consultant, and my creative streak sort of was crushed by 13 years of corporate life. So I didn't really think about writing fiction. I was so miserable in my job about 10 years ago, I wrote a nonfiction book, which is now out there as Career Change under Joanna Penn. And that led me into blogging and speaking, and I started to make an income on the internet with nonfiction type things. And I had this blog, The Creative Pen, and I was talking about writing and self-publishing, and I was learning about book marketing. And someone came on my podcast. Podcasting can change your life. a guy came on my podcast, Tom Evans, the book writer, and he actually said, I think you're blocked about writing fiction. And I said, no, I'm not. I don't get blocked. That's not me. And he said, yeah, you are blocked about writing fiction because you think the only good book that you can write is a literary novel. And I was so stunned by his words, and I realized it was true. And so I did NaNoWriMo.org, which is National Novel Writing Month, which I wrote 20,000 words of what eventually became Stone of Fire, the first book in the Arcane series. Mm-hmm. So that was back in 2009. I wrote the first 20,000 words. I published the book in 2011. So that took me around 14 months. And then the next book took me a year. The next one took me 9 months. And now I'm writing, you know, 4 novels a year. so it's definitely, you know, been a journey. But I still write nonfiction, as you said. I still speak. I have a varied sort of portfolio. But I left my job in September 2011 to do this full time. So I am making a living with my writing these days, which is exciting.
Which is brilliant. But definitely, I so empathise with what you're saying about that feeling that really the only book, you know, real writing or whatever it is, literary fiction, and that being a huge pressure or a block. So it's great that you had that epiphany on the podcast.
Yeah, but I think that one of the things that I challenge writers on is, you know, when I say, what is your definition of success? To me, there are actually two quite different poles. And one, you know, level of success is winning a literary prize and having critics say how brilliant you are. And the other one is selling, you know, multi-million books to readers. And I decided at that point that my definition of success was to sell millions of books to readers. you know, Stephen King being one of my ultimate sort of heroes, in that, you know, only now being sort of recognized as one of the great writers of our generation because of millions and millions of readers loving his books. But of course, he clearly writes genre fiction. And so I decided pretty much, look at Dan Brown, I'd rather have Dan Brown's success than win the Booker Prize.
Absolutely. It's so silly though, because I didn't think that I believed in the sort of the genre snobbery. I read genre fiction. I love Stephen King, all the rest of it. But it's still, when I came to write myself, I still felt this really crushing, this crushing fear of being judged or of producing something that wasn't good or producing something that was genre or, you know, so it was very difficult. Did you have any, after your epiphany and obviously doing NaNoWriMo, which is a really great way to just, you know, get going, were there any other sort of practical things that you did to help you segue, I suppose, from nonfiction to fiction to develop that creative side of you again or nurture it?
I very much was using the artist's date. It's very hard to say. by Julia Cameron. You
okay.
Know, yeah, we all read that back in the 90s, I think, you know. And so I was getting out. I find modern art galleries particularly good for thinking outside the box as such. And, you know, I think I was writing some poetry, terrible, terrible poetry, but really just kind of leaning into changing my mindset. And the other thing is I started to listen to podcasts and read blogs by people who were successfully self-publishing. And at the time, there were people who the first million, you know, the million sellers on Kindle, you know, back in 2011, it was becoming possible in 2011 for a fiction writer to make a lot of money. And as somebody who, you know, was leaving her job and really wanted to make a living as a writer, I was very interested in this kind of thing. So when I did write the Arcane series, I very much designed it with actually making some money, totally writing it around a genre I love. So I pretty much buy everything in the conspiracy thriller niche. So really, you know, writing a genre I know very, very well. And of course, we all know if you want to make really good money, you write romance, but I'm not a romance reader. So I'm not a romance writer. I decided I want to write something that will be a commercial success, not something that will just drop out of nowhere. I noticed that many people were writing series. So I designed the Arcane Secret Agency, which is a government agency under Trafalgar Square in London, which investigates supernatural mysteries around the world. And, you know, had so I can have my agents go around solving mysteries around everywhere. And so it sort of suits a episodic series idea. And the next thing I did practically was I did join a How to Write a Novel in a Year course.
Okay.
And, I was in Australia at the time, so it was at Queensland, Library of Queensland or something like that. And that was once a month on a Sunday, you know, meeting up, and, you know, we do character one month, plot another month. But the idea was that you had actually written a whole draft by the end of the year. So the key to that is the deadline. So that would be my, you know, big tip to people. You have to set a deadline. And I now schedule everything in my diary. So I started the book I'm writing now, I started last Monday. I have in my diary every writing day I will do, and I know how many words I have to hit in order to write the first draft by around the middle of October. And I've already booked my editor, you know, for certain days. So to me, that setting a deadline and constraining myself is really important. But that first book did take a year, and then I went through an editing process. Obviously, that would be another tip. Have, you know, professional editing, whether or not you're going through an agent or self-publishing, is absolutely critical. So pretty much I probably spent the same amount of like a graduate degree over the last a few years on various courses, you know, always trying to improve my craft. I paid for a lot of professional editing because I believe every time I get edited, I learn more. But yeah, practically also the other thing I find with writers is that some people seem to think that rewriting the same book for 10 years will make you a better writer. My opinion is the more books you write, the better you become. So I have 10 fiction titles now, 7 novels, 3 novellas and a short story series, so kind of 11. But every time I publish a book, every time I write another draft, I get better. So we can tell that with anybody. You know, Terry Pratchett, who recently passed away, you know, he wrote the massive Discworld series. And if you ask a Terry Pratchett fan, they'll probably say, start on book 10. So, you know, my personal opinion is, you know, I'm 40 and I'm, you know, where I am now, I have a lot of books to write. But every time somebody finds one of my novels, they are likely to go back, if they enjoy it, they are likely to go back and buy everything else I've written. That is one of the cool things about being a fiction writer. You make more and more money over time because every time somebody new discovers you, they buy your backlist.
It's very, very encouraging to hear that. I might print it out, put it above the computer.
Well, it's true. I mean, look at Stephen King. Look at, you know, even in Britain, you know, or Scotland as you are there, Val McDermid, I just read her Splinter the Silence. You know, I reckon she must have written that book in order to please the people who love her series. And, lots of people put out the next book in the series and everybody goes by it. So, you know, you see this, and the top earning authors are all in their 50s and 60s. People like Nora Roberts, who writes a book a month, you know, James Patterson, who does a lot of co-writing. Whatever the literary establishments say about these authors, they are loved. They are beloved.
Yes. And, yeah.
That's what I want to be.
Yeah, no, me too. I want to build a readership. I want to build a long-term career. I want this to be the thing I do.
Yeah, until the day we die.
Yeah. I'd like to be more productive. I'm not as I'm quite a slow writer and I'm working to improve that. But just wanted to touch on something you said about, you know, writing more than one book to learn rather than rewriting the same book. And I do really agree with you on that. And I also think that there's something very something very useful about finishing things as well, because if you rewrite the same book, you're effectively never finishing.
Yeah.
And also, I think there's something very psychologically healthy about actually finishing the damn thing and moving on.
Definitely. And I would say to people right now, novellas in the ebook market are really popular. So you don't have to write a 70,000 word, 80,000 word book. You can write a 25,000 word novella. So I've got one called One Day in Budapest, which is just prescient right now with what's going on in Hungary. And that's, you know, that book means a lot to me. It's 25,000 words. I get emailed about it all the time. It sells well. You know, it's only on at $2.99 US or £1.99, I think it is. But it's still, you know, it makes me $2 a copy. And it took me, I think it took me 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
Brilliant.
So this, yeah, this is the thing. You don't have to write a full-length novel. I mean, it's very difficult to write a full-length novel, we all know. But yes, finishing is super important. And then again, on the time it takes, I think I'm a slow writer. Like today was a good day. I wrote 2,000 words in about 2.5 hours. But I would normally write around 1,000 to 1,500 a day. The thing is, it's when I put it in my diary, I actually write that. So I don't sit around thinking about writing. You know, I actually do write. When I had a day job, I used to get up really early before work and write before work. And, you know, putting constraints on things actually helps you achieve faster.
Absolutely.
You know, because I've booked my editor, there's no choice. I have to get this done. And also, I you know, Stephen King says, you know, you've got to sit down and at the same place every day, and the muse might show up smoking his cigar or whatever. But, you know, if you're not there, it's not going to happen.
Yes, so true. So true. And in the early days, in terms of advice for people at an earlier stage, you know, you said you did that course. I suppose that also had a kind of accountability element to it, because every month you knew you were going to go and be doing it more. So that can...
Yeah. But what's interesting about that course, I think there were 28 of us. And the woman said to us at the beginning, of you, you know, sitting here, only one of you will finish a novel. And I was like, yeah, it's going to be me. And surprise, surprise, it was me. and I had an email the other week from somebody who was on that course with me. And this was back in 2009, 2010. And she said, you know, I'm amazed to see that you're on book 10. I'm still writing the one that we were doing back on that course.
Oh gosh.
So I think you've just got to look at what you want to achieve with your life. And you know, set some... the thing is, a year can pass and you look back and go, what the hell happened? Whereas, you know, I now measure my life by what I create. And, you know, I've got my little shelf here with my books on, and they're not perfect by any means, but they're doing all right.
And there's also no such thing. That's something else I think I'm still in the process of letting go of, that there's some arbitrary bar that I have to hit, you know, when it is such a subjective thing.
It is. And every writer, this is the thing. I mean, when authors get rejections and things and they think it's personal, the thing is, every reader is different. Every agent is different. Every publisher is different. What's so brilliant about self-publishing and about the internet world we live in now, you know, I've sold books in 68 countries, and, you know, there's readers in Burkina Faso, you know, in sub-Saharan Africa reading my books. I don't know how they found me or what they see in my writing, but they love my writing more than the literary agent sitting in a London office. You know what I mean?
I
have a massive American audience, and I sell much better in America than I do here, because they love Dan Brown. You know, Chinese people love Dan Brown. So I think actually England's my worst market because of the literary kind of snobbery that goes around. But it's all about your definition of success at the end of the day. One book I would recommend to people, it's called The Pursuit of Perfection and How It Harms Writers by Christine Catherine Rush, and Rush spelled R-U-S-C-H. That is an excellent book, and it will help anyone with any perfectionist issues.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you. Well, I think I shall have to go out and buy that instantly, and I will put it in the show notes as well. But the global market thing is very, very exciting. And I always, when you talk about it on your podcast, I always feel so invigorated and excited and optimistic about the future, because there can be a lot of doom and gloom in the sort of publishing, in the media regarding publishing. So, but you're so right.
Yeah, and I would advise people also to look at authorearnings.com, which okay. is a great site. They've just released another report today. Something like 45% of Kindle sales are now self-published.
Wow.
So the reason there's so much doom and gloom in traditional publishing and why they, you know, saying that their sales are dipping and everything is because the indies are taking market share. So and also they I would also advise people here that most of the industry reports are based on ISBN numbers, and writers uh-huh. like me don't use ISBN numbers, so uh-huh. they're not necessary to self-publish. So this report on authorearnings.com for September 2015 goes into that. It's something like 30% of books on the Amazon top 200,000 have no ISBN.
Oh, wow.
So when you hear reports in the media, just realize where they're coming from and which part of the industry they're from. Whereas, you know, my kind of cohort of indies are doing well. So uh-huh. yeah, I think it just depends what your business model is. And like we were just saying about the global market, mm. you know, even if people are listening, are published in the UK or America, like have a look at your contract. Do you own the rights to the rest of the world? Can you self-publish in Australia or Canada or New Zealand or anywhere else, you know? And there's a growing, and this is all English, by the way, the 68 countries are English language. India has more English speakers than the UK, all of whom are educated readers. China has more English speakers than the UK. So be looking at what you've sold and what you haven't sold. Or have you sold audio rights, for example? If you haven't, look at acx.com and think about getting your book out, you know, in audio format. Mm-hmm. So there's so much possibility for writers, but what I see, so many authors are just kind of disempowered and don't realize what they can do themselves. You're like, you don't need a publisher. You don't need an agent. Now you can make a really good income on your own and not have to pay 15% or, you know, whatever it is. I mean, a lot.
Well, that's really great advice. And I'm going to put links to all of this amazing information in the show notes. But people should definitely go to Joanna's website, which I will mention again at the end, but it's thecreativepen.com. Is that right?
Yes, thecreativepen.com.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic. And it's chock full of amazing resources and information. But I just wanted to say, because you have the Creative Pen website and you have your podcasting, professional speaking, writing nonfiction, so you have that creative business. And then, of course, you have your novels. How do you balance the two sides of your professional life, both in terms of the sort of headspace that they take up, but also time management?
Yeah, and I've just written a post on this actually about Plato's chariot, the metaphor of, you know, back in ancient Greece when they had chariot races and you had two horses pulling the chariot, and the dark horse and the white horse. And for me, the dark horse is that shadow side, you know, Carl Jung's shadow, the part of your personality that is the darker side, which for me is J.F. Penn. And, you know, J.F. Penn is a sort of chronic introvert and would rather just sit alone and not speak to anybody and go visit graveyards and write in the, you know, just write stories. And not talk to anyone. You're talking to Joanna Penn. And Joanna Penn is my white horse, you know, is the side that wants to help people and is more outwardly focused. Still an introvert, but, you know, I want to help other people. So I say this side of me is the side that wants to be Tony Robbins, you know, the sort of self-help speaker. And the other side is the Stephen King who sits in a vault. So I think, you know, what I actually have done to balance these is I just use my diary. So I absolutely schedule my time. So generally in the morning, so at the moment, because I'm writing the first draft of this novel, I've got every morning, I've got a block. So before around 1 o'clock every day, I'm writing, I'm focused on fiction. So I go to the cafe around the corner and I do my words. And then the afternoons, I'll do interviews like this. I'll do the marketing side. I'll blog, do my own podcasts. You know, anything involved in marketing and business, I will do in the afternoons because I'm a morning person. So it's better to do that. And then, so I just use my diary and I just schedule that time way in advance. Mm-hmm. So if I've got JF Penn in the diary, then I would say, no, I'm sorry, I can't do an interview because I'm doing JF Penn stuff. So I think if people just take the mindset of booking time for their fiction, mm-hmm. like, you know, I know many people, many parents will book their play dates for their kids or, you know, book stuff way in advance for school, but won't actually book their own writing in their diary. So, you know, I really challenge people around that, of just using a schedule to force yourself. Like, even if you end up sitting there for an hour just researching something interesting, at least you've had that hour when you're that's for you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you might just write down some ideas that you have, and then the next day maybe force yourself to write 200 words. And, you know, if you write 200 words a day, you've done really, really well by the end of the year. So, those would probably be some of my tips.
That's brilliant. And in terms of sort of staying productive or staying creative over the long haul, because I'm so impressed with your, not just what you've achieved, but the sort of sustained effort and achievement that you have managed. And I was just wondering if you have any top tips for that. Like, do you still take artist dates, for example? Or
I mean, it's funny because I think I would say that it's a bit like, I think of it like a pipe almost, in that I'm constantly, I have an app on my phone called Things. I also use Moleskine notebooks, but I find Things on my phone much better now. So it's basically, I just write, I've got a folder called fiction ideas. And as I go about life, I just write stuff in, you know, in that folder. So mm-hmm. I was just watching the TV the other day, and I saw there's a documentary on the, you know, the under the sea, you know, it's about the ocean. And I just they said something about shark skin, and I just wrote down this thing about shark skin and how it's really interesting. I put here, I've just opened it up. It says, a man is reading music on the train like others would read a newspaper, his foot tapping to the tune in his mind. Like, I just like, and that was, I can now remember that guy on the train. Or the British Museum are calling for postcards of things like the, you know, Palmyra before it was destroyed by ISIS. Stuff like that, you know, or body hacking. I just wrote that down. You know, anything that I hear or see or experience, I will write down little notes in my folder. And then what I find is that things just bubble up from my subconscious. And so I'm writing a book at the moment, working title Risen Gods, which is about New Zealand and the volcanoes and the, you know, sort of apocalyptic dark fantasy, based on an idea I had way back in like 2004 when I was living in New Zealand, and there was, you know, there are earthquakes and things there. So that idea is now kind of coming out of me. And I know the next book I'm writing, which will be Destroyer of Worlds, will be about the Kumbh Mela in India, which is a Hindu festival. And that is one I've been thinking about for years as well. So I find the, I don't have enough time to write the ideas that come, but it's more about that pipe, the pipe idea. Like, you've got to keep them coming all the time. Keep the idea, keep the inflow working so the outflow works as well. Okay. Like, I don't think I've ever had a creative block after I decided to write fiction. Like, everything now, it's more a case of trying to choose the right project to focus on. But if you're not enthusiastic about what you're writing about, you might have the wrong topic. I must say, I can't stop getting ideas. And it really is just from everything around you. Like, I didn't feel like this back when I had a day job. I felt like the most uncreative person in the whole world. So it's something to kind of train your mind to do. Just maybe start off by writing down one thing a day that you notice in the environment. Maybe it's, you know, the color, and it needs to be very specific. You know, one of the tips with fiction is specific is much, much better. Mm-hmm. So it's not a blue flower, it's like a blue iris that's in front of a Victorian terrace with the sun on the sunflower with a bee, you know. So just being really, write down something specific that you see in your environment or you hear on the TV or whatever, and over time you just, you know, the ideas just keep coming.
Oh, that's fantastic advice. Thank you so much.
No worries.
Well, you're being so positive, but the title of the podcast is The Worried Writer, so I'm very sorry. But I'm going to have to ask, do you ever have any, these days, do you ever have any sort of struggles when writing? Or is there a part of the process that you find difficult, or when fear or self-doubt will hit you or is most likely to hit you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I always say that writers, authors in particular, are sort of, we struggle with massive ego and chronic self-doubt. You know, you have to have enough of an ego to want your books to be read, but we all also think we're all terrible all the time. Everything we write is awful. what was funny is the more you talk about this, the more you realise everyone feels the same. I was at Thriller Fest in New York earlier this year with Clive Cussler, David Morrell, who wrote First Blood, which became Rambo, you know, Karen Slaughter, who's a big crime writer, whole load of massive, Lee Childs, who writes the Jack Reacher series. All these big name authors who are all multi-million bestsellers, all multi-millionaires, you know, said, one person in the audience asked the same question, and they said, look, every time we finish a book, we think it's going to bomb and we won't sell a copy and people will hate it. And, you know, this will never stop. They literally just said, look, this will never stop. This is part of the creative life. You have to just accept that the feelings of self-doubt, the feelings that the book is terrible, the feeling that you, and I get every time I finish a book, I really think I will never write again. I have nothing left. I have nothing left. I will never write again. Mm-hmm. And I felt that. And it's funny because it's only October, but I felt that in July when I put Deviance out, my last novel, I really felt like I am empty.
That's exactly where I am right now. I just finished the edits on a book and I've just got that. I'm never going to write another book. I'm never going to have another idea. That's it. I'm done.
That's it. Yeah.
Panic.
Yeah. That's just normal. So what you have to do is, what I do is I actually focus on something else. So writing nonfiction, I actually use as a palate cleanser, because writing nonfiction is actually a lot easier than fiction. It's like, just write something that you know about or that you can research in an organized fashion. And self-publishing is great like this, of course, because, you know, who's going to stop you? So I tend to write nonfiction or do something that is not really, that is helpful to other people, as opposed to using stuff out of my brain. But what you find, as you know, because you've written a number of books, is that eventually you'll feel the need to write again and something will emerge. And I have that on my wall as well. I have a load of stuff on my wall. This one says, trust emergence. Because over and over and over again, I have thought, oh goodness, there's nothing left. And then something will just emerge. And also, like when you're writing, I'm sure you know, it's like synchronicity happens and the story will emerge and you're like, whoa, how did that happen? But you just have to trust the process and trust the creative process and the fear of judgment, like I had when that book Desecration that you're reading was quite a departure from the kind of upbeat action adventure stuff, and goes into, you know, has some quite tragic stuff in, has very dark sort of thoughts around the meaning of the body after we're dead, you know, and use of medical specimens and stuff like that. And I just was like, oh my goodness, people are going to think I'm so weird. my mum stopped reading my books. My mother-in-law would say things like, why don't you write something nice? My husband stopped reading my books. What you have to think is, again, my family and friends are not my market. I can't base that on them, because actually, you know, you like graveyards, right? You and definitely. I have more in common. Yeah, we have more in common in our sort of what we like around fiction than I do with my mother, my husband, even my, you know, my best friend in real life. You know, that's just the way it goes.
Yeah. And there are enough of us who like the dark, gothic, disturbing.
Oh goodness, so many. I mean, I do this now when I speak. I say, okay, who likes to walk through graveyards and take pictures? And I kid you not, it is always about 25% of the audience.
There we go. That's our demographic.
It is people who are comfortable with death, basically. People who fascinated. Don't shrink from it.
Yeah. Excellent. So has anything, obviously putting things up on the wall, I really like that idea. I love a good quote anyway, but I think putting them up on the wall or where you can see them where you're working is a really great tip. And I also love what you're saying, that it is just a case of accepting that this is part of the process and that it's normal and that it will happen every time. So not to panic.
And actually, people will hate your book, no matter how many editors you have. You will get one-star reviews. And the fact that, I mean, you only have to look at the top-selling books. Go look at the Pulitzer Prize-winning books and then go compare them to E.L. James' 50 Shades of Grey. You'll find the same proportion of one-star reviews.
Yes.
I mean, and actually, 50 Shades of Grey has a lot more positive reviews than some of these prize-winning novels. So the definition of a good book is not up to you. It's up to the reader. And I think that is so important.
And I also love the way that the way that you talk about this sort of idea of choosing yourself as well. It's, and you know, you say about just, you know, defining success for yourself. But I really admire that choose yourself philosophy. And I just think you were very brave in deciding to self-publish a few years ago. And was it very scary at the time, or did you just feel quite gung-ho about it?
I think I'm not somebody who likes to ask permission. After I'd written my first book, and then I was like, okay, well, what happens next? Oh, right, I'll look at the publishing industry. And I started to find out what the publishing industry was. And I discovered this kind of rejection thing. And I was like, do you know what? Why? How did they get to reject me? That's crazy. So I didn't like the negative. Also, I felt the power imbalance was very wrong, as in, I just wrote something. I'm the creative. Why do you get to tell me I'm not worthy? So I didn't like that. And I discovered self-publishing before the Kindle, before it became trendy. So I first self-published in 2008. Mm-hmm. 2008. And then the Kindle came, and of course now it's much more mainstream to self-publish, although there's still a bit of a stigma. But back then, the thing that gets me, well, one is the control issue, you know, and two, the power imbalance, three, the speed. Like, the speed of publishing is utterly ridiculous in a digital age, in that once the writing and the editing takes the same amount of time, but once my book is ready, I upload it, it's for sale within 4 hours, and I get money 60 days later. I mean, what is not to like about that? And the other thing, of course, is the money. So I get 70% royalty, 70, as opposed to around 10%, which is what most authors get. So no, I actively choose to self-publish, and I continue to do that. I have an agent, but he does foreign rights and other things.
Well, I absolutely love your approach to all of this. And I've mentioned you on the podcast before and on my website, but absolutely, I should put all these links in the show notes. I urge everybody listening to immediately go and read all of Joanna's books and go to thecreativepen.com and to listen to her fantastic podcast every week, because it's a real boost. So thank you so much for doing all of those things.
Oh, thank you so much, Sarah. And, you know, part of the reason I love to share is to, you know, help other authors, you know, in the same way that you're doing. And I said to you just before the show, you know, this is the best time for authors and creatives. Mm-hmm. This is the rise, the maker movement worldwide, people and creatives taking things into their own hands, you know, indie music, indie film, even things like farmers markets, you know, people choosing to buy from creators, and, you know, not on the high street in Etsy. People, you know, customers worldwide are choosing small artisan products over mass market, which is essentially what the big publishers are now. So, you know, this really is a renaissance for creatives. So I hope you and your listeners will just feel like woohoo and get out there and create more.
Well, I definitely do, but I definitely need to go and write some more words, because I haven't written enough words today and I feel galvanized.
Excellent.
But just to finish up, so I will point everyone to The Creative Pen, of course, but what's the latest release or what's next for you? Is there anything you'd like to tell the listeners about?
That's a tough one. I would suggest
so many things.
Yeah, so many things. I'm actually writing my nonfiction book I'm writing at the moment is about mindset for authors.
Oh,
but
wow.
Probably the best book to check out is How to Make a Living with Your Writing, which is my latest nonfiction book out earlier this year. And that has a video series as well associated with it at thecreativepen.com/freedom. And that includes, you know, ways to actually make some money. And if you're interested in self-publishing, check out thecreativepen.com/blueprint, and that is the author 2.0 blueprint, everything you need to know about self-publishing, and all of that is free. So hopefully that will help more people get their work out in the world.
I'm sure it will. Well, thank you again for your time, Joanna. I really, really appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks for having me, Sarah.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.